book of Genesis tonight, if you want to go ahead and turn to chapter 37. And I've been looking forward to this all day, and I hope I don't waste your time because you had to swim to get here. So we'll try to be concise and say it, and hopefully it'll help somebody. So Genesis 37 is where we're going to be. You know, this week, in case you guys didn't notice, I know the kids did because they were out of school, we celebrated MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day. And what it meant for us at work was a bunch of folks were out. We don't celebrate it, but people take it. You know, we grant that. But it's a interesting thing, and it means a lot to a lot of people, that day does. It changed our nation, the things that Martin Luther King was able to accomplish. And it's kind of amazing to me when you look back on a life like that, and I know, you know, there were things surrounding him that I wasn't alive during the time, and I don't really know what's true and what's not, but I do know that he was watched very carefully by the FBI, the CIA. He was a very suspicious person to a lot of people. He was accused of a lot of things, and whether that's true or not, I don't know. Things like extramarital stuff and whatever, you know. But he was making a stir, and you know, there are forces that want to discredit someone who's trying to make change. But the movement that he ended up in front of in America really changed us, and it was the right thing, you know, at least from my perspective, and I hope from yours. You know, Abraham Lincoln made a big change with equal human rights across races. And it's kind of funny, or not funny, but it's weird that we still went several generations after a race was freed and still treated people as second-class citizens. You know, lesser than us. And if in your heart, and I know you don't, but if in our hearts we believe there's any group out there that's lesser than us, whether it be another race or another gender or another group or another belief system or you name it, you know, we like to group people. Dr. Seuss got it right when he in his story about the star-bellied snitches. You ever seen that little clip? Look it up if you hadn't seen it. But, you know, some of them had stars on dars, and that was cool for a minute, and then those, right, Miss Brenda? You with me, aren't you? Yeah. And then there were no stars on dars, and that became cool. I don't remember how it went, but it's about grouping people. You with me back there, Miss Rebecca? Okay. So that's the way human nature works. We kind of put ourselves in categories and in groups. And the truth is, as Christians, we're not better than anybody else. And if we start thinking we are, we're backing up. We're going the wrong way. But I will tell you this, I just looked up a little bit because I wanted to refresh myself on Martin Luther King and his life just a little bit. He was jailed 29 times. 29 times. And you say, well, maybe he was causing trouble. Well, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But one time he was jailed for going 30 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone in Montgomery, Alabama. I mean, how many of you ever been jailed for going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit? So, you know, he was a target for scrutiny. you know, but I'll say that, and this fits into my lesson, I'll say that he was born with a specific purpose that he had to execute in life. You know, kind of like we talked about last time I taught, Moses was born with a specific purpose to get God's children out of Egypt and get them out of bondage. And that was imprinted in his heart early in his life, and he went through things to go execute that. And I would say that MLK had some of those similar characteristics. Not that I'm necessarily comparing him to Moses, but it was a grand movement of its time. So, did you guys know? Do you guys think he was no matter what you think of him, I think most people would say he was a good speaker. You know, even President Obama, whether you agree with his politics or not, you got to stand back and say that dude can speak. I mean, that he was impressive, and that's, in my opinion, that's what won him the presidency. That's what put him in a place where he could be a president, because he could stand up and he could connect with people and he could deliver a message and he looked presidential. Martin Luther King was the same way, except he delivered a message of vision and inspiration. But When he was in high school, he came in second place in a speech contest. Oh, well, I mean, this must have been natural talent that he had. How in the world could he not just win the whole thing? Well, when he got out of high school and went into the seminary, he took two speech classes, and he made a C in one of them and a C-plus in the other one. So that just goes to show me that it's not always natural talent that gets someone to a place they're supposed to be. Sometimes it's a matter of purpose and timing and opportunity and growing. But that same C student eventually gave a speech, the famous speech, I Have a Dream speech, on the National Mall in front of 250,000 people and cameras broadcast all over the world. And I'd say that speech made a huge ripple. Even today, it's impressive the impact that speech had. And I would just say God can do big things with unlikely people. And the central thought of this message is there's an ingredient that we owe to that if God's going to use us, and that ingredient is obedience. We owe obedience. And plus nothing, minus nothing, because we have nothing else to bring. So I want to talk about another Bible character, a Bible character that also had a dream. We're going to talk a little bit about Joseph tonight in Genesis 37. Starting in verse 1, it says, "And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old," note his age there, he was 17, "was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father an evil report." So the first thing we see about Joseph in the Bible here is, first of all, he was a teenager. And it turns out he was a tattletale, a little brother. Now, to me, that speaks a little bit about Joseph's level of maturity. And lesson number one tonight that I want to bring to us is you don't have to talk about everything you know about people. Joseph came in telling the news on his brothers, gave an evil report, and it was none of his business to be reporting in on them. It's also none of our business to be reporting the things we know. Just because we know something about somebody else or know somebody else's business, we are not obligated to share that. Knowing something is not an obligation to make sure the rest of the world knows it. You can sit on information. Joseph could have sat on this information and not lost the favor with his brothers. He had a lot of reason that he lost favor with his brothers. In verse 3 it says, "Now Israel," and here's the biggest reason, "Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors." In verse 4, "And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." Now this is human nature. This is just flat out jealousy. I'll say that we all have jealousy in our hearts to some degree, and it will eat us up if we let it. And Joseph's brothers were sick with jealousy over him. Their dad, they needed their dad's approval, and their dad was obviously giving Joseph more favor. Matter of fact, he not only gave him more favor, he labeled it. He created an image of that favor, the coat of many colors, and put it on Joseph to show that favor. Anybody in here ever been jealous? Well, I wouldn't admit it in public if I were you. But I'll just tell you this. I have a nature of being jealous. And I don't know why. I have a nature of being competitive. And part of that has a streak of jealousy in it. I had a friend the other day. I'm on LinkedIn, and I got like a bunch of friends out there, or whatever you call them, connections. And I get updates when they get promoted or they get this or this happens to them. Well, I have a friend that I worked with years ago. Tremendous individual, great professional, always executed well, always good to me. I get a clip come through that said he was promoted to vice president. My first emotion was not, oh, I'm so happy for him. Why not? It's uncontrollable. I got a tinge of jealousy. And I go, why in the world am I this way? Why in the world is that my first reaction to someone else doing well? He's not taking anything from me. He's not getting anything I want. He's following his path. Why in the world do I have to feel jealousy when somebody else gets something? It makes no sense. Now, once I process it, I'm good, right? But why are we that way? Or maybe it's just me. Am I by myself on this? No? Okay, thank you. Because I was starting to feel a little vulnerable up here. I didn't know. But I tell you, we're that way. And if it's persistent in our lives, a sibling, a friend, there can be a hate that's developed there. And that hate was developed on Joseph from his brothers. So in verse 5, it gets even worse. Before I read verse 5, I'll say that jealousy, because that emotion is so strong and because it's so deep and because maybe we have such a hard time controlling it, I think it will cause us to take actions that we never would do if we could think it through. I think it will cause us to do things that we don't even realize necessarily why we're doing them and cause harm to people. And Joseph's brothers, they were really no different. So in verse 5 it says, "And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him the more. And he said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood around about and made obeisance to my sheaf." I didn't say that word right. It's basically subjection. They bowed down. So let's look at Joseph's maturity level. He had this dream that basically said his brother was going to bow down to him. And he told it. He told it. For one thing, he didn't have to tattle. For another thing, he didn't have to come strutting in and telling the dream that he just had that was going to make everybody jealous of him. We don't have to tell everything we know. We don't have to tell everything we know about other people. We don't have to tell everything we know. We don't always have to be heard. You know, sometimes it's okay just to be a part, but not be all up front. We don't have to always tell everything we've heard. You know, I've gotten this wrong a lot of times in my life. Pushing in, being loud, being heard, making sure I was forceful in situations. But as I've gotten older, I've learned that a little bit less can be more. You know, you can pull back a little bit. And Joseph didn't seem to know that. And he basically told his brothers, I've had this vision, I've had this dream, and you're going to be in subjection to me. You're going to be submissive to me. They were already jealous of him. So in verse 8, his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. They wouldn't have hated him if they thought he was a goofy little kid being boisterous or playing games but they already knew their dad loved him and favored him. They were already jealous. And for him to say something that they thought could be true was even more. So in verse 9 it says, "And he dreamed yet another dream, and told his brethren, and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" So now he's told everybody. Mama, daddy, everybody, you're going to be bowing down to me. And his brethren envied him, but his father took note. He observed the saying. See, what was happening was Joseph was starting to get a vision and a purpose set in his heart and in his life. Now, he wasn't, in my opinion, I've never heard anybody else say this, but in my opinion, I guess I get one. He could have been a little more discreet about the way he shared it. But the bottom line is, he was getting a purpose and a vision set in his heart. And God was telling him, I'm preparing you for something else. God was telling him, I'm going to put you in a place in the future, and you need to get your heart, you need to figure that out. He was giving him that vision. God does that for us. He did it for Joseph at an early age. He does it in a way, sometimes it's very quiet, and sometimes it's just for a moment, and sometimes it's just enough that we can reference and understand that we do have meaning, we do have purpose. He put this in Joseph's life and set him on a path. So, you know the story. Joseph had made his brothers mad, and his brothers, it turned out, they almost killed him. And ultimately, they sold him into slavery. And I'm gonna paraphrase to get us so we don't spend so much time. So he was sold into slavery at this point, and Joseph was still able to see God's favor, and he was still set with God's purpose, though his circumstances had changed significantly. He went from being his father's favorite son, safe at home, to now he's been sold into slavery to Potiphar. And now he's a slave and a servant in Potiphar's house. Yet he still remained obedient to God when he was serving Potiphar. And God blessed him because of that. And he ultimately became Potiphar's right-hand person, running his house, running all the affairs. And that tells me that regardless of the situation we're in, that obedience and that faithfulness to God and that faithfulness to the duty that's put before us is important. If we can be honorable in the place and in the position that God puts us in, even though it might be a position that's lower, and even the position of a slave or a servant, then God can work that situation for us to take us to a place of prosperity. And there he was running all the affairs of Potiphar's house. Now, I see some maturity start to set in on Joseph here. Remember, he had the tendency to tell everything he knew. Well, he gets in a situation, and you guys know the story, in Potiphar's house, where Potiphar's wife starts making advances to him, inappropriate advances, and starts pursuing him in an inappropriate way. And Joseph didn't go run and tell it. He just kind of, whoa, no, we can't, no, that's not, no, I'm a servant to your husband, and I'm taking care of the house, and no, your husband has never held anything back from me, and this shouldn't be, and he wouldn't be pleased with that. And then he gets caught in a situation where he has to run, and he gets accused, and Potiphar's left with no choice, right? Even though Joseph was able to show some maturity and have discretion, he was still caught up in a he said, she said situation. And a wife versus a servant situation is basically uneven. It's unfair. So Joseph ends up being sent to prison. So remember, Joseph has said in his heart that everyone's going to be bowing down to him. He's going to be this great being, this great ruler. Yet, he finds himself sold into slavery, and now he's sitting in a prison. So the situation for Joseph is getting worse. And Potiphar's house situation ended up landing him in prison. So, see, he's starting to get a little bit of wisdom, and he's starting to experience some things. And he's getting, you know, if you're the favorite child of your parents, you can do no wrong. I don't know if anybody was in that situation or had a sibling that was in that situation. If you did, you probably hated them. And if it was you, you're probably okay with it. But if you're the favorite child, whatever you say is smart or whatever you do is okay. And if you spill it, it's not too bad. Well, Joseph was in that situation where he had a pretty good deal. Well, after being sold into slavery. And now being in prison, Joseph is starting to go through some hard times. and he's having to learn some things the hard way. And even though he's got God's favor on him, these situations are trials for him. So I had I have a mentor that told me a few years ago in one of our discussions. I was like, hey, what do I need to be working on? What do I need to do? You know what young people ask. And he says, oh, well, you're not ready. I'm like, well, okay, that's hard to hear. First of all, I'm not ready. He says, yeah, you're too young. You're not ready for the next level. I go, well, I'm not really that young. What are we talking about here? What do you mean I'm not ready for the next level? I've been doing all these things. He said, I don't mean too young in age. He said, I mean you're too young. I go, oh, you know, I'm starting to get a little nauseous now. Like, what's he saying to me? He said, you don't have enough scar tissue. I go, I don't have scar tissue. He says, no, you haven't hurt enough. You haven't failed enough. You haven't been through enough. You need to build up some scar tissue before you're ready for the next place. There's a lot of wisdom in that. There's a lot of wisdom in that. Because you got to build up some tough spots. You got to build up some wisdom. You got to build up what he calls scar tissue so that you're able to handle that next place in life. Well, I see Joseph as he's traveling on his way through slavery and through prison, I see him building up scar tissue. Have you ever known anybody that seemed to make it from here to here, like in no time at all? And they really never had any barriers, and they just shot right up there, and now they're in charge of this big, great thing, and they're in this high position. If they don't take the right path and they don't get that scar tissue along the way, they get up there and there's arrogance, boisterous. Everything I say is right. Why should I listen to you? You're not here. You're not here. You're here. Why should I listen to you? I must be better because I'm here. That's what you get when there's not the trials. And what really needs to happen is what Joseph is going through here. Okay, all right, I made it through that situation. I'm building some strength. Okay, I'm getting confident. Oh, failure. Okay, all right. Okay, I can do this. We can figure this out. Build it back up. Okay, moving forward. Oh, blind spot, something hit me. Okay, failure. Then, when you get to this place, oh no, you're not boisterous, you're not arrogant. You're not in a place where you can't listen to people because you fail. Now you're in a place to where you can be a ruler. You're in a place to where you can be someone that can be useful to a team, to a nation, to a church, to a people. And Joseph was going through that at this point in his life. So Joseph was on his journey. And I would say, rest assured that when God has set his path, just like he did for Joseph in the beginning, he can get us to that ultimate place. And I believe the key ingredient is obedience. Now, I want you to listen to this because I didn't say it. And it's the most profound thing I've heard in quite a long time. Charles Stanley said it this week. I was listening to him on the radio. And this is what he said. He said, God always assumes full responsibility for the consequences of our obedience. God always assumes full responsibility for the consequences of our obedience. So God has told us what we're supposed to do in our lives. somebody swoops in and says, well, hey, would you like this big promotion? And you go, oh, it doesn't fit right with God's plan for me. I can't do that. That's just, no, sorry. And there's consequences to that. They may never offer again. That opportunity may never show up again. Those are the consequences. God has control over those consequences. He accepts full responsibility for those consequences because he can make a situation that's better. He can make a situation that's different. He just wants our obedience. So Peter walked on water because he was obedient when Jesus said, come. Now later, Peter failed. He failed when the rooster crowed and he denied Christ. But through that failure, he gained humility. And then he was in a place to where he could be obedient again at a higher level, and he could take the gospel to the Gentiles. Peter had to go through the denial experience and fail hard so that he would have the humility necessary so that he could get to a place where he could stand up against everybody, the entire culture, everybody that that he was close to and say, no, God does love these people too, and God is offering the gospel to these people too. And oh, by the way, your customs of what you think you can and can't eat, God said there was nothing unclean, so go ahead and eat it. Peter had to stand up to all that. He did that after the humiliating experience of failing. And all he had to say at that moment was, yeah, I know that Christ. Yeah, I was with him. He couldn't even say those words. God had to take him through that failure journey so that he could use him in the place that he was supposed to be. And he told him beforehand, you're not ready. When you are converted, when thou art converted, then I'll use you to feed my sheep. That's what he said. Peter had to go through that. And you know what? It's okay if we're in a place of failure right now. It's okay if we've backed up on our journey. If you're not dead, God's not done. 5 years from now, nobody will care, nobody will remember. 10 years from now, we'll be talking about something else. God can take things that are imperfect. He does, and He did, and He has, and He will. And He'll do great things with them. I mean, you go break Moses down in his parts. There wasn't much to Moses. There wasn't much to him at all. He couldn't even talk. He couldn't even speak. He wasn't even clear. He didn't have a lot of courage. He needed a lot of people to help him. He wasn't even obedient enough to make it into the promised land himself. But he was obedient enough to be used to fulfill God's purpose that he had for him. God can take the obedience that we can give, and he can get us to a place where he can be used, where we can be used. So, if you failed, you just got some scar tissue. It's all right. It's preparing you for something else. So I've seen people through my years. I've seen them go from, and I was talking to a guy the other day. He's doing pretty well right now, but I watched him go. I guess it was 4 years ago. He was a hero. Had great authority, very much in charge. Then he went to a zero, a laughing stock. Then he went, and now he's back to a hero. And I said, man, I'm really proud. You know, you stuck in there, and you are where you are. And he said, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's just amazing, the journey. And what I tell people, and this isn't in my notes, but I'm going to share it right now. To me, life is like a roller coaster. It has its ups and its downs, and its ups and its downs. And the way you fail is when you're on your downs, when you're down at one of the bottoms, you destroy everything around you. You destroy the ride, you destroy the rails, you shatter everything into pieces, and then there's no opportunity, you know, to get back up. But if you can just calm down, if you can just calm down and be in that moment and learn from it, and dig in, and regroup, and be quiet and listen to God, it won't be long. It won't be long. The ride keeps going. And you can end up back in a place to where, you know, to where you're making progress. So, you know, there's so many things dangling out there for us that we think of as prosperity. God's not impressed with any of that stuff. He's not impressed with position. He's not impressed with power. He's not impressed with money. You know, if I had, you might say, if I had $10,000, everything would be great. I'd be on top of the world if I had $10,000. Okay, some of you think, well, $10,000 is nothing. If I had $100,000, though, now if I had $100,000, yeah, now we're talking. Now I'm strutting. I got it all figured out with $100,000. Well, there's people, you know, $100,000, what's that? There's people, you know, that have $1 million. Yeah, well, yeah, if I had $1 million, that'd be the place I'd need to be. That's easy street. That's there. That's making it. Well, $1 million, I mean, in today's world, you can't even, there's folks out there with 10 million and 100 million and a billion. Well, it doesn't matter which one of those numbers we achieve. It can either be given or taken away the next day. God has power over all that. God doesn't need any of that. God only, He can't use any of that. Why does He need your $1 billion when He's got access to everything? Everything. He made everything. What he needs access to is our obedience. That's what we've got to offer. If we can say yes, He can use us. If we can say no, he's got to teach us. But if we can say yes, He can use us. So we're all making decisions all the time. We have to weigh these things. We have to weigh these things, these consequences of saying yes or no to different things. But remember, all we need is obedience, and God handles the consequences. I know these young people. I've got kids now who are starting to get closer to college age. One's 14, one's 16, and they're both getting letters from colleges. Colleges all over the United States, big colleges, small colleges. Some of them you've heard of, some of them you've never heard of. You know, there might be Stanford, there might be Georgia Tech. Well, which one do I choose? Well, in today's thinking, you choose the one that's has the most status and the most promise, right? And you choose the highest one you can get into, and you try to get on the top. But the truth is, that's not the solution set for us. The choices are, well, what does God want for me? And if Yale will have me, or Harvard will have me, that's impressive, maybe. But if God wants me at, I don't know, Kennesaw, and God will handle the consequences of that obedience. And if Kennesaw is the choice that God would have me be, then He can handle the rest of it. Obedience is the ingredient that God needs from us. He can fulfill our purpose and the vision that He has set. Remember the Hebrew boys in the fire? They were just obedient. I mean, fire can't even burn you up if God chooses for it not to. So Joseph was obedient. Now we're back in prison. Joseph was in prison, and God's favor was on him, and he was faithful in the things, and he found a purpose in the prison, and next thing you know, he's running the prison for the guards. Seems everywhere Joseph went, he was learning how to lead. Isn't that amazing how God had a vision that people would bow down to him? He gave him that purpose. And as he's making his journey, gaining his scar tissue, he's also getting these skills that are required to manage people and to manage situations. Just blows my mind how God works. So when he was in prison, he interpreted dreams for a butler and a baker. Now, the baker ended up being hanged. Bad dream, bad outcome. Well, the butler, what do you think, Sister Christy? He just got hanged. I don't know. I mean, I could go read the verses, but that's what it said. All right, you good? All right. So he was hanged. And the butler was restored back to serving Pharaoh. So, all right, I don't want you to miss this point. It says in the Bible that the butler forgot about Joseph. He had interpreted that dream for him. The dream said he'd be restored. He was restored. The butler forgot about Joseph. It says he thought of him no more. 2 years later, the Pharaoh starts having dreams. And suddenly the butler remembers this guy in prison that can interpret dreams. And he spoke on Joseph's behalf and got him in front of Pharaoh. And I will tell you this from personal experience. Not that I'm always obedient, but if we can be obedient, God will send random people in our lives to go speak for us on our behalf in rooms where we're not even aware conversations are happening. God will set us up with favor for those who have rule over us, like Pharaoh, by someone we don't even know, and he will set that up, that situation up for us. And that's what happened here with this butler. The butler said, "Hey, Joseph's been there for a couple years, and he's locked up, and he can interpret that dream for you." You see, all God needs is our obedience. He can do the rest. And for time's sake, Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream. He guided Pharaoh to put back 7 years of harvest and 7 years of plenty so that he could provide for the people of Egypt over 7 years of famine. Had Joseph not interpreted that dream for him and had not set him up that way, the people of Egypt would have famished. Turns out, Pharaoh made Joseph his right-hand man, put him in charge of distributing all the spoils from the first 7 years to all the nation that needed it for the last 7 years. And guess who shows up needing food and bowed down before Joseph requesting food? We're back to the family now. Joseph's brothers, their wives, the father, they all bowed down to Joseph. And here's the beautiful part of it. Because of the journey that Joseph had taken, because of the wisdom that he had developed, at first he didn't even tell them who he was. He showed that wisdom, he showed that restraint, he showed that quietness, and he handled that situation with all the mercy and grace that you could ever imagine from someone. He had made himself from here to here, and he was the type of person that could handle that situation, and he showed mercy and grace just like Christ would have in a situation. So if God has planted a vision in you, a vision that He's preparing you for something, a purpose on you, don't let it overwhelm you. Don't be surprised if you sit in hardship for years. That's called learning. I don't know if you remember, but that's that sparring partner. It's not there to kill you. It's there to teach you. It's there to make you stronger for the real fight. Just know that you have one duty and one duty alone in that situation, and it's to be obedient and let God do the rest. Thank you for your attention.